Welcome to Lit from the Basement. This is Danielle.
This is Max.
I'm an author and professor.
I led a band of eugenics war-era supermen until I ran afoul of Captain Kirk. Now I'm a stay-at-home dad.
We're a married couple who discuss literature in our basement while our children are sleeping. Our show is pretty simple. I introduce Max, my poetry-resistant husband,
Hi-dee-o.
To a poem, which we use as a springboard for conversation in the 1 hour we have to ourselves in the evening.
The boys are now asleep.
So let's talk.
Okay. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. I just returned from the trip.
Hours ago.
Yes, literally 4 hours ago. I just got home from a trip to Colorado Springs, where I was giving a reading and teaching a class at Colorado College, where my dear, dear friend Natanya Poli teaches. Mm. So it was kind of a business trip and kind of a friend trip.
Sounded like it was a lot more business. Because you look exhausted. I'm exhausted. It was just me with the boys.
Yeah.
My mood deteriorating by the day.
You're always cranky when I come home from a business trip.
I know. I should be elated and happy. I am elated and happy when you're home.
You also like can't get out of like parenting mode. I got home. I'm like with the boys. We're sitting there and
I'm still hovering.
You're still hovering. I don't remember what it was, but I was like, go relax. I'm here. Like I can.
It was. I think during
I can
dinner,
handle our children.
I was like still hovering dinner.
Yeah.
And you're like, tag out, go yeah. away. Your mom and sister, because I took them up to see them uh-huh. briefly today, and your mom was like, we got it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I'm very glad you're back. Thank you.
Okay. I'm glad you're glad I'm back.
What you got for us?
Because I didn't have like a whole lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were busy.
I'm just going to talk about a poem that I have been reading for a long time, and one that I actually presented to the students at Colorado College
okay.
while I was there.
Well, then there, it's fresh on your...
Yeah, hopefully. It's a poem called Dangerous for Girls
okay.
by Connie Boycine. There's a lot that I like about the piece. It uses a kind of like an accumulation of voltas and or associative leaps to create this kind of overall juxtapositional form.
Volta, again, was a return. I know the word means return, right?
Turn.
Turn.
Yeah.
Just means turn.
Yeah, turn. The turn in the poem. So if the poem has a big... Well, you know what? I wouldn't say that this poem has a lot of voltas. The accumulation is really of a number of associative leaps, more than voltas, which aren't always exactly the same thing. Kind of going back and forth on myself. I don't know. Write in. Tell me if you think that an associative leap is also a volta. I suppose they're not mutually exclusive.
No. What little I understand of the terminology, I could see them working side by side.
It's basically a shift in rhetoric or image or emotion mm-hmm. or tone in the poem.
Okay.
Perhaps the people at home don't quite know what I mean by associative leap. Perhaps you do. But what I mean is a disjunctive transition in a piece of writing that's left unexplained through conventional syntax or rhetoric.
And for layman of everything you just said, layman's terms would be?
It's like a space or silence, a kind of single move in a piece of writing, which feels like the person is leaping to a different subject mm-hmm. in that sort of silence or
so
moment.
It feels like it kind of came out of left field, but it's actually yeah. quite orchestrated or quite.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit non sequitur. Like, why are we jumping to this thing right now?
Mm-hmm.
An associative leap. So it's usually an association for the speaker of the poem.
Not for the listener, particularly.
Not necessarily for
gotcha.
The listener. And there's not usually like a transition where they're like, however, or or
meanwhile.
Yeah, exactly.
At Petticoat Junction.
Yeah, exactly. Back at the ranch. There's none of that, right? Like it's just a jump cut to
okay.
the next scene or the next subject.
When it's really jarring, we call it a smash cut.
Oh, a smash cut. Is that what it is? Is jump cut not a thing?
Oh, no, it absolutely is.
Okay, good.
But when it's really hard and neck-breaking,
oh,
like
I see.
Usually it's accompanied by a whip pan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, all right. So this is a linguistic smash cut.
Whoa.
You should have seen his totally exaggerated face at that particular moment. But to tell you a little bit about Connie Boycine. So she's the author of 4 books of poems.
Mm-hmm.
Her most recent is The Bower, which is a book-length poem about her family's time in Belfast. Her previous books are Calle Florista, Rare High Meadow of Which I Might Dream.
Mm-hmm.
which is actually the book that this poem is taken from, mm-hmm. and was a finalist for the Los Angeles Times Book Award, Cathedral of the North, which won the AWP Award in Poetry.
Okay.
She was also a Fulbright Fellow in the School of English at Queen's University in 2012, and she teaches in the Creative Writing Program at New Mexico State University and lives in New Mexico and Chicago.
Just between the two?
Yeah.
Let me guess. She winters in New Mexico.
I'm willing to bet that New Mexico in winter is still more lovely than Chicago in winter. And I'm just going to say the name of this collection again, because I think it's amazing.
Okay.
So the collection that this poem is taken from is Rare High Meadow of Which I Might Dream. Beautiful. I love it. It's a little poem in itself. But yeah, I do have to give you a warning.
Okay.
This poem is brutal.
Are you warning me about it being brutal?
Well, you've been in such a bad mood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like this isn't like happy and nice, but maybe the brutality will
our time together will snap me out of the bad mood.
I hope so. I don't know, like maybe I was just sort of feeling this poem because of an extension maybe of thinking through goth.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't think that I intended, and I don't necessarily just always associate dead girls with goth, but mm-hmm. but there are a lot of dead girls in this poem.
There was a lot of dead girls in your book too.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
If you want to read along with the poem, just go to our website, litfromthebasement.com. Click on the
show notes. Yes, get it.
Not in a public computer. If you're a library, don't do that. Don't lick the screen. Click on the show notes tab along the top and scroll to the show title with the poem's name. The most recent show is always on top.
Yum. These show notes are divine. Now I'm going to read this really serious poem.
Wow, I just saw the first line.
Yeah.
Okay, fun.
You can change your life.
Dangerous for Girls by Connie Voisin. It was the summer of Chandra Levy, disappearing from Washington, D.C. Her lover, a congressman, evasive and blow-dried from Modesto. The TV wondering, in every room in America, to an image of her tight jeans and piles of curls frozen in a studio pose. It was a summer the only woman known as a serial killer, a $10 whore trolling the plains of Central Florida, said she knew she would kill again. Murder filled her dreams, and if she walked into the world, it would crack her open with its awful wings. It was a summer that in Texas, another young woman killed her 5 children, left with too many little boys, always pregnant. One Thanksgiving, she tried to slash her own throat. That summer, the congressman lied again about the nature of his relations, or, as he said, he couldn't remember if they had had sex that last night he saw her. But there were many anonymous girls that summer. There always are, who lower their necks to the stone and pray. Not to God, but to the Virgin, herself once a young girl, chosen in her room by an archangel. Instead of praying that summer, I watched television, reruns of a UFO series featuring a melancholic woman detective who had gotten cancer and was made sterile by aliens. I watched infomercials, exercise machines, pasta makers, and a product called Nails Again with Henna. Ladies, make your nails steely strong, naturally. And then the photograph of Chandra Levy would appear again, below a bright red number, such as 81, to indicate the days she was missing. Her mother said, "Please understand how we're feeling," when told that the police don't believe she will be found alive, though they search the parks and forests of the Capitol for the remains And I remembered being caught in Tennessee, my tent filled with wind lifting around me. "Tornado, honey," said the operator when I called in fear. The highway barren, I drove to a truck stop where maybe 100 trucks hummed in pale, even rows, like eggs in a carton. Truckers paced in the dining room, fatigue in their beards, in their bottomless cups of coffee. The store sold handcuffs, dirty magazines, t-shirts that read "ass, gas, or grass, nobody rides for free." And a bulletin board bore a public notice. Jane Doe, found in a refrigerator box outside Johnson, Tennessee. Her slight measurements and weight. The photographs were of her face, not peaceful in death, and of her tattoos, "Born to Run" and "JT," caught in a scrollwork of roses. One winter in Harvard Square, I wandered drunk, my arms full of still warm, stolen laundry, and a man said, "Come to my studio." And of course I went. For some girls, our bodies are not immortal so much as expendable. We have punished them or wearied from dragging them around for so long, and so we go wearing the brilliant plumage of the possibly freed by death. Quick on the icy sidewalks, I felt thin and fleet, and the night made me feel unique in the eyes of the stranger. He told me he made sculptures of figure skaters, not of the women's bodies, but of the air that whipped around them. A study of negative space, which he said was the "where we were not" that made us. Dizzy from beer, I thought, why not step into that space? He locked the door behind me.
Foot race against supermodels.
Super up? Great.
I know. I'm so sorry. It's such a brutal poem. I feel like it's almost not fair to give this to you, but I super do love this poem.
No, that's, I think it, with my love of the, my cynical love of anything grim, any other week probably would have been great.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, so back to this really uplifting, and she was definitely meeting her assaulter halfway there.
Right.
Wow.
I mean, that's the really interesting thing about the speaker of this poem, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's always this sort of question surrounding disappeared women, right? And I've got a little picture of Chandra Levy for you to.
Yeah, I remember we were both in grad school when that happened.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you were thoroughly not remembering me back then. Coming to my parties, not remembering me, greeting me at your parties, not remembering me. But yeah, so we have this opening, which of course is of a very famous case. It was a while ago, and a lot has happened.
Right.
So Chandra Levy disappeared on May 1st, 2001.
Mm.
The police were looking for her. On May 7th, her father told the police that his daughter had been having an affair with a U.S. congressman.
Yep. Conduit, I believe. Gary Conduit?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The congressman was married.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story that the media sort of ran with, and I think the reason why it became so famous.
Well, because he was ducking and dodging.
Yeah, he was acting really strange. And it doesn't necessarily mean that he's the one who killed her.
Oh, absolutely not.
Right? Or anything. But the fact that he was so squirmy about the whole thing, when they had like all these phone records of like she had been calling him at all hours.
Yeah. He thought he could somehow still be adjacent to a murder investigation or a missing investigation,
right,
and not let it reveal that he had been having an affair with her.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, this ended his career in Congress. So Chandra Levy was an intern at the Federal Bureau of Prisons in Washington, D.C. They presumed her murdered after they found her remains a year later. But the case attracted so much attention, you know, because of this. She was attached to this famous congressman.
Right.
And then, like a lot of these murder cases, I mean, it just became this sort of voyeuristic, like everybody was sort of like licking their chops to find out what, like, ooh, he was having an affair with her.
Yeah. Eminem made a callous little rhyme about her.
Really? I don't remember this.
How can one Chandra be so Levy? It was just a part of his rhyme. I'm like, but he was reaching for the rhyme, but I'm like, dude, I remember the time going, man.
You know what's so funny?
That is a line.
I've never, like, I have heard that line actually many times, and I didn't know what it was talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that's what this poem starts with, is that situation.
Yeah, I just saw the first line. I'm like, oh, I know that name.
Was this sensational story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about this line, too, blow-dried from Modesto.
Yeah.
I love it. It's perfect. Partly because you have the repetition of the O and the D sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of sounds like blow-dried sort of sounds like a reverse or an inverse somehow of Modesto.
Okay.
And so I sort of like that. But then also the implications of that, like blow-dried, like he's done up, but also like with dry skin or his like lack of emotion.
Yeah, he's just presentation. Yeah.
Right. And that is contrasted with the image of Chandra Levy in tight jeans and piles of curls frozen in a studio pose. And that was actually her graduation photo, the one that kept being shown everywhere and over again. Yeah. So, and the graduation photos are really sort of campy like that.
Yeah.
Or posed like that, rather, not campy. That's the wrong word to use. Graduation photos are really posed like this, usually. But there's this sort of way, this lurid way in which they're showing this picture of this young woman over and over, like, oh, her jeans are so tight. Oh, her hair is so done. Look at her, like, lounging in this particular way. And the implication is, to a certain extent, of course this happened. One of the projects of the poem seems to be getting to this moment where, I mean, the very last scene when it comes down to walking into the studio and she says, and of course I went, seems to be sort of giving a deeper psychological look at why a woman might make a bad choice like this. Like, why would Chandra Levy have gotten involved with this married congressman in the first place?
Well, there's the belief that the victim meets the killer halfway.
Yes.
That, which is ridiculous.
Right.
That is, I mean.
And like, honestly, even if they, like, do you think that any of those victims ever thought, oh yeah, I'm going to get murdered?
Oh, great. I would love this guy to make a necklace out of my teeth. Sure. Sweet.
Right. That's not what they're thinking. Well, but
it's the same kind of, though, maybe they found themselves in a place where they still had a kind of a stupid abandon.
Yeah.
Like that first time you take a hit of acid.
Right.
Or you're about to do something very possibly reckless.
Right.
And you're going to test the limits of your existence, but that's not meeting somebody halfway.
No, I mean, that's just sort of experimenting with life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In some way, right? Like, what thrilling next thing can I do?
Right.
But there are a couple of things here. So there's Chandra Levy.
Mm-hmm.
There's this evasive congressman.
Yeah.
And then in the very third line, the TV wondering in every room in America, to an image of her tight jeans, etc. And the TV is going to be a theme for like the next several lines, right? Because the speaker is watching. So the next lines are, it was the summer, the only woman known as a serial killer, a $10 whore trolling the plains of Central Florida, said she knew she would kill again. Murder filled her dreams, and if she walked in the world, it would crack her open with its awful wings. So the first one is a woman who actually has been murdered, obviously by a man at some point. What man was in question during this era? And then the next few lines are the famous woman serial killer.
Eileen Wuornos.
That Charlize Theron played.
Eileen Wuornos.
And people were really fascinated with, I mean, people are always fascinated with serial killers, just generally.
Yeah.
I don't like to hear about them. I don't like to seek out those stories. People love true crime podcasts. I just can't stomach it. So the next line is a total subversion, right? Like, we have this sort of classic victim here, a young woman who's good looking, who maybe doesn't even know what she's getting into, but getting into something illicit, right? She knows she's having an affair with like a married congressman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like maybe a certain thrill of that, but that doesn't equal what happened to her.
No.
Right. So, and then in the next line, there's this subversion because, you know, women aren't supposed to be killers. Right. Also, we assume that this serial killer was twisted this way in her past. Like, if she is a prostitute, that she's sick of her body being used thusly. Right. Which it then leaps to this next one of the woman in Texas who kills her 5 children.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so these are the first 3 things in this poem.
Where are the puppies?
Yeah.
And
I know. What is that line? Cancer of the puppy?
You look like you have cancer of the puppy.
You look like you have cancer of the puppy. Where did that come from?
It's from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the first thing I think of when I'm just like, this is insane. This poem is insane. Like, it jumps to these 3 things of really brutal and sensational stories. Mm-hmm. And to have these 3 things back to back starts to feel like this terrible accumulation of death surrounding the female form in some ways. And of course, you know, you have this slight subversion of, you know, women aren't supposed to be serial killers. And then you have, a complete reversal subversion of motherhood.
Yeah.
Right. But there's not much said about what may have led her that way. I mean, obviously, lots of women are exhausted from having children. There's no talk about, like, say, postpartum depression or postpartum psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how young was the little one? And the very fact that, you know, we are given the fact that that Thanksgiving she tried to slash her own throat, which is profound.
Yeah.
Like, she wanted to go.
Yeah.
And there's no talk of how she was being kept there. She was clearly a profoundly disturbed and depressed woman. Like, who was keeping her in that situation, and how?
Yeah. Who sent her home with just 2 Advil to go take care of her kids after trying to do that on Thanksgiving?
Right. So we have these 3 things, which basically lead to a view of women and death. There are 2 dead women and then a woman who kills.
And then also we come into laying the neck down on the stone. Mm-hmm. So for the headsman's axe.
Yeah. Although that's a little bit later.
Or did I jump ahead?
Yeah,
okay,
you jumped ahead. So the next one, she comes back to Chandra Levy.
Yes.
In the next stanza. That summer, the congressman lied again about the nature of his relations. Or, as he said, he couldn't remember if they had had sex that last night he saw her. But there were many anonymous girls that summer. Okay, line break. I love that line break because you don't know exactly how she's going to end.
Right. Is it the congressman had many women, or
exactly,
just like across America, how many anonymous women?
Yes. Yeah.
Or the invisible.
Right. The invisible women. Right. But yeah, the line break there, exactly right, is when you're just reading it straight through this line break, you're like, but there were many anonymous girls that summer. And you're like, is that what you said, Congressman? And they have been possibly true for him.
Right.
You know, there's this implication that, you know, he couldn't remember if he slept with her because he kind of sleeps with all the girls.
Mm-hmm.
But then she goes on. But there were many anonymous girls that summer. There always are, who lower their necks to the stone and pray, not to God, but to the Virgin herself, once a young girl chosen in her room by an archangel.
Tiptoeing with blasphemy now.
Right
on.
Yeah. I thought you might like that.
Yeah.
So she is likening these women laying their necks to the stone and praying, like taking the, taking some sort of chance, some stretch, some rebellious moment, mm-hmm. and hoping that it doesn't end in death.
Yeah.
Right. But then to go to that, to that their sort of patron saint would be Mary, who
got raped by an angel.
Right. Or got raped and then.
And said it was an angel.
Right. Yeah. Or, I mean, I was going to say, like, the Annunciation is like the angel being like, hey, you're pregnant. Like, no, it's not. To be chosen here isn't a good thing.
Right.
In the context. To be taken against her will by God. It's not the visit of permission asking. It's the Annunciation. Right. I'm here to tell you about what's about to happen to your body now that you're knocked up.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish he would have given her such instructions, but just like, hey, you're gonna have God's baby, here's how it goes, like, you know. And all of this, of course, is assuming that we're taking the story literally, mm-hmm. at some point. And then there, oddly, okay, so we go to
the X-Files from there.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. I wondered if you were gonna get the reference there. Yeah, so instead of praying that summer, I watched television reruns of a UFO series featuring a melancholic woman detective, which, if it's a UFO series featuring a melancholic woman detective, it has to be Scully.
Yeah.
Who had gotten cancer and was made sterile by aliens. Right? So we've gone from Archangel invading Mary to aliens invading Scully. And the ways in which these, the structures of these stories get repeated over and over and over again. That these girls lay their head on the stone, that the girls, you know, get announced by angels that, you know, Scully is invaded by aliens. Like, part of thinking through narrative is putting a dead girl in it. And actually, you know, when I was talking with Natanya's good friend in the department at Colorado College, Steve, who reminded me that Poe said that, like, one of the most romantic things was a beautiful dead woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's perfect for Poe.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I think you said a beautiful pale woman.
A beautiful dead woman.
Oh, and a pale. I'm sure pale was floating around there somewhere.
Yeah, probably so.
Maybe with consumption. Oh.
And so the structures of these narratives are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like an innocent woman, mm-hmm. or semi-innocent woman is then invaded in some way.
And then the man has to pick up a machine gun and set the world right. That's all this poem's missing. The remedy.
An action hero?
Yeah.
You killed my girlfriend.
You killed
now
Phil.
I'm going to kill everybody else.
Yeah, you just do like a Mad Lib. You killed fill in the blank.
Yeah. Yeah,
now I
totally
must avenge.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I mean, this poem refers to X-Files, which I just love that. So we get another strange reversal anyways, mm-hmm. with the X-Files. And so Scully is made sterile by aliens, which is a reversal of the Virgin Mary story. Supernatural visitation that, instead of impregnating her, causes her sterility. Now, the line doesn't end there. On I watched, right? It ends after the sentence and then begins a new sentence. The phrase I watched is cut off at the end. There's emphasis on the watching, right? The voyeuristic consumption of all of these terrible stories without really thinking of how these stories shape us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just over and over and over again. And what comes next extends that idea. Infomercials, exercise machines, pasta makers, and a product called Nails Again with Henna.
Yeah. These murders have been brought to you by...
Yeah.
It's just, these are commercial breaks for our feasting on this horrific news.
I know. And then the line, ladies, make your nails steely strong, naturally. So what the...
Now back to abduction and murder.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Of women. So what the poem has been focusing on throughout are these terrible stories in the news. And here she tells us what they are framed by, advertisements,
mm-hmm.
which are often aimed at women.
Mm-hmm.
So women's bodies are expendable, malleable alongside commercials for how to be more physically appealing and
to
therefore consumed. Right? So for the first time, she...
Ladies, have all of your friends been murdered and you're just sitting there all by yourself?
Oh, my God.
Time to do up that hair and those nails.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so here I feel like the poem is connecting this kind of voyeuristic consumption with capitalism, right? With what can be bought and sold. So that there almost seems something sinister about the commercials.
Yeah.
You know, why do women need steely strong nails? Probably the commercial didn't say to fight off serial killers. Yeah, probably it was like to open this Diet Coke. But like, given all the threats of the poem so far, it doesn't seem like
it's the gopher eyes of your assaulter.
Right. It seems like that's what it's saying. So there's something else, though, happening here, which is that I'm wondering why this speaker is watching so much TV.
Well, there might be recouping from what happened on the last line of the whole poem.
Well, the what happened in the last poem happened in winter. Well, I'm sort of wondering. So you think that this is happening before that moment or after that moment? I was imagining it before that moment.
Oh, no, I'm just...
Oh, interesting. Well, we'll have to argue about that when we get down to it.
Okay, I won't argue. I already say you have the superior insight. Except for that Carl Phillips poem.
Oh, you're going to hold that over me till the day.
I'm not holding it over you. I just like everybody to know that the author of the poem did write in to let us know that Max is right.
That's true.
But all the things I defer to you.
Well, it seems like you have to say that in this poem, right? Like the poem is about like about like the brutality of chauvinism.
Mm.
Anyways, so there's this emphasis on watching. There's this emphasis on TV. So and advertisements. So media is fully complicit in all of this, and all of this consumption of these terrible stories. These dead women are put alongside advertisements, and then we come back to Chandra. And then the photograph of Chandra Levy would appear again after these advertisements below a bright red number, such as 81, to indicate the days she was missing. Her mother said, "Please understand how we're feeling," when told that the police don't believe she will be found alive. Whew. So they were all keeping account for this one woman. And how many other women have we talked about in this? I mean, she's lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then we get a far more gruesome image later on of somebody that nobody seems to care about. But how the reason why Chandra Levy becomes important in her disappearance is because of the man that she was connected to.
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
Not for herself.
No. So... we're keeping count for this one woman, probably because she's young, conventionally attractive, and linked to a congressman. But how many women go missing in this country who aren't on the news? And in this case, it's going on a little long, right? So the media doesn't have a lot more to talk about. They've sensationalized at 81 days. They've talked through everything that they could possibly talk through. They have no actual physical evidence of the actual body. So instead, they begin to consume the grief of her mother.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how could the watchers at home, like, consuming this story, even begin to understand how the mother is feeling? Like, please understand how we're feeling. And at this point...
people are just eating popcorn and staring at her blank-faced.
Right! That's exactly what I imagined.
What else? Is this going to get better? What are you going to do?
Yeah. <It's> like... I know. There's... behind this idea of TV watching and watching all of these terrible things, I mean, I think about... all the things that humans have done for entertainment. I mean, gladiator fights and like, we're coming in at down for a public execution. And, you know, there are so many things that there's something really like ghoulish.
Something? Wow, that is a brave statement. How dare you denounce gladiator fights?
I'm tired. I'm tired and this poem is brutal. Why did I do this? Because I do think it's really gorgeously written. It's an amazing poem. So at this point, the speaker has been largely silent about herself.
Mm-hmm.
She's only sort of tangential to the poem at this point. We don't really understand why the speaker is obsessed with this story. She's 81 days missing, right? We've been given so many stories at the start here, and they're all sensational, that we haven't actually even considered the speaker. Why is she obsessed with watching this news cycle? Why is she watching TV? It seems like she's depressed. She's watching infomercials.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just like a personal thing. Like one of the lengthy times of depression for me, I did find myself watching some infomercials.
Well, you don't plan your day around viewing infomercials. You don't say, okay, I'm gonna check these boxes. When I'm done, I'm rewarding myself with some ShamWow infomercials or Ginsu Knife. No. Yeah. That's when you've quit.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You're laying there going, oh, now even.
Yeah. Oh, I guess it's an infomercial. Sure, I'll watch
and
this.
And I'm so disconnected, I won't even turn the TV off.
Yeah.
Because I need my brain filled with something.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You're never in a good state when you're watching infomercials.
No, that's true. Yeah, I think the one time I was like super depressed, I ended up watching this infomercial for, I think, some Pilates home videos. And I did end up buying them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was that far gone.
I'm so depressed. I'm going to buy Buns of Steel.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you may laugh, but
I am.
My buns looked great. So we're so busy consuming all of these terrible stories ourselves that we don't even yet comprehend that we're actually watching them through her perception.
Mm-hmm.
That the first experience we're told about in this poem is actually her watching TV. And then we begin to wonder, why is this speaker telling us about watching TV? And of course, you and I are like, she's super depressed.
Yeah.
But we ourselves haven't even asked yet, why is she telling us the story? Because the stories themselves are so sensational that they have piqued our interest.
Yeah. And they kind of, yes, I was going to say, they kind of eclipse my, no, you're right. No, they don't eclipse the narrator.
They do.
They
and
do.
Also,
but we are like, uh-huh, and?
Right. So for all of my, like, shaming of anybody, like, consuming these, like, you know, when I pick up this poem and I started reading it, like, what is she going to do with all of these things, all of these situations? And then in the next stanza, we get a dizzying associative leap from the story of Chandra Levy to the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Though they searched the parks and forests of the capital for the remains, and I remembered being caught in Tennessee, my tent filled with wind, lifting around me. Tornado, honey, said the operator when I called in fear. So it goes from searching the parks and forests for the missing body of Chandra Levy to the speaker alone in a tent.
Yeah.
So we assume a park or forest and alone in a tornado.
Hiking the Appalachian Trail, I'm thinking. That's just a Tennessee tent. That's the only thing that came to mind.
Oh, interesting. I had never stopped to consider that. I think I was always fine with the generality of it. But
I think that's where it begins, is down there.
Oh,
I
really?
Think. Because it goes all the way up to the Northeast.
Oh.
I'm not a hiker.
I was going to say, how would you know that?
Dated a hiker.
Yeah.
Who hiked the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That makes far more sense.
And he was a serial killer.
Don't say that.
I'm just kidding.
So awful. So I want
the
you to...
The he or the serial killer part?
Oh, my God. You know the serial killer. So I want you to remember this tornado that happens in here.
Yes, because the wind moving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? That whipping around. So we get this hard transition. Well, it's actually quite a beautiful and subtle transition, but suddenly the eye of the poem, the speaker, is sort of considering herself in relation to Chandra Levy's missing body in a park.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the first time we're anchored really solidly in the speaker's perception, partly because she's not watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
Here, and she's in a place of danger. So there's this immense destructive whirlwind around her, and no one is looking out for her, and her only vigilance is calling a completely disinterested operator who can do nothing for her, and separated as they are by space. She goes where? To the nearest safest place, which apparently is the highway barren. I drove to a truck stop where maybe 100 trucks hummed in pale, even rows, like eggs in a carton.
So even trucks are fragile and in threat, but also truck stops, not a safe place.
No, not at all, which she's going into, like, in the next part, right? You know, we get this this nicely placed image of the truckers with fatigue in their beards. Which is, I think, a really great way of saying they look exhausted, but also like several days growth.
Yeah. And also they don't care. So stuff is falling. Their highway food they're eating is just gathering on their beard too. I mean, they are like, they're exhausted.
Yeah. So truck stops, notoriously unsafe places, if for no other reason than being sites of transients, right? Like there's nothing permanent. There's nobody looking out.
No. One transient gets swooped in and picked up by another transient. Nobody noticed it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and then always adjacent to these truck stops, you have the porn shops on the interstates.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's what she goes to in the next few sentences. Mm-hmm. The store sold handcuffs, dirty magazines, t-shirts that read ass, gas, or grass. Nobody rides for free. She's talking about this sort of like larger culture. Like this is a funny thing to joke about. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to ride with me, you must prostitute yourself.
Oh, are you in distress? Did your car break down?
Right.
Well.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is a perfect situation for me to take advantage of your vulnerability. And then, of course, we get this horrible next image.
In a porn shop.
Yeah. And a bulletin board, which bore the notice, Jane Doe found in refrigerator box outside Johnson, Tennessee. Her slight measurements and weight. The photographs were of her face, not peaceful in death, which is gruesome, right? That they're posting this on a board somewhere that people are walking past. And of her tattoos, born to run. And JT, caught in a scrollwork of roses. So, I mean, this JT is sort of interesting to me. She loved someone once, right?
Or was branded by a pimp.
Maybe.
But you're right. We lean towards this person did have a history. There were people that knew this woman.
Right. And where was JT?
Yeah.
Where was JT when this happened? I mean, you know, maybe it was just like a careless thing she did when she was like 18, you know, but in a scroll work of roses, you know, like who is that? Maybe, you know, was it a family member? Was it a lover? Was it, you know, who was this person that she cared enough about to tattoo their initials on her body? And then born to run, which is supposed to be a kind of freeing thing, like running with the bulls or like can't
catch a ride with the wind, baby.
Yeah, can't keep me down.
I'm free.
But of course, born to run in this context is terrifying.
Yeah, like a rabbit is born to run.
Exactly, exactly. So they show her dead face.
Peaceful.
Not peaceful. They tell us that she's nameless. She's Jane Doe. And we get a close-up of her tattoos. So at this point, we're through two experiences from the speaker. The television watching, and then the tornado / truck stop story. Mm-hmm. So the first section, the speaker is barely in it. And the second feels like she's pretty sort of even about what she's observed at the in the truck stop. But she's stepped into the story now as a definitive eye, at least one that is observing the world around her and also threatened by the world around her. So at this point, she becomes a kind of character. And in the next several stanzas, she steps fully into scene.
Yes.
One winter in Harvard Square, I wandered drunk, my arms full of still warm, stolen laundry. And a man said, come to my studio. And of course I went. Okay. So the character of this woman, what do you imagine?
Are the clothes stolen from need, or did she have a couple of drinks? She's a student. She's like, you know what? I'm going to do something stupid. I'm going to have a couple of drinks. Oh, I'm going to do something stupid and impulsive. I'm going to walk in, take some laundry because I feel a little chilly. Why not? I don't know why I'm doing this. And I'm going to walk along and this guy sees me drunk.
Drunk and stealing laundry. So, right?
Why don't you come to my studio?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that is more or less what I imagine is that it's maybe mostly just carelessness, right? Mm-hmm. She's wandering drunk through Harvard Square and picking up stolen laundry.
Yeah.
I love that they're still warm in her arms. And a man said, come to my studio. And of course I went. And of course I went. So this is an interesting moment of tension in the mind of the speaker. Like there's this moment where I'm like, well, haven't you been the one telling us about all of these terrible stories?
Well, this is before we found her on the couch.
Yeah. And well, I mean, that's a question for me.
You're right.
Before or after, I don't know. Either one. Because then she goes on to explain quite directly why she goes, mm-hmm. right? For some girls, our bodies are not immortal so much as expendable.
Mm-hmm.
We've punished them or wearied from dragging them around for so long. And so we go wearing the brilliant plumage of the possibly freed by death. Like that there's this sort of onslaught in our culture, in media, in literature, of these terrible disfiguration and deaths of young women
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again. And that it's so romanticized and so voyeurized and so well consumed that there's this sort of sense of like, well, it seems like anywhere I turn, something terrible is going to happen to me.
Yeah, why don't I just get this done with?
Yeah. And also, like, why should I be careful? These girls weren't not careful. This part is sort of the expository and philosophical interlude in some ways.
But even like the next, quick on the icy sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
So still not being careful.
Yeah.
Even towards this.
Oh, yeah. Drunk, carrying warm laundry on an icy sidewalk, right? I felt thin and fleet, and the night made me feel unique. In the eyes of the stranger, she's been chosen. She's been chosen, right?
He likes me.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the archangel and the aliens and the serial killers and the congressman, right? He thinks I'm special. And this is one of these moments that I feel like, I mean, maybe not the stolen laundry and maybe not like wandering down, but I feel like that moment is the one that a lot of women can relate to. In thinking back to being young
mm-hmm.
and maybe not so attuned to what it means if somebody approaches you and tells you that you're beautiful. Like the first person who tells you beautiful, you're like shocked. He said I was beautiful, you know, like nobody's ever said that to me before. Or, you know, he said, oh, you're special, you know, like that merely saying that stirs in you like, oh, you're the one who thinks I'm special. I should be listening to you then. And you don't even think too much.
Why is he tying a bib around his neck? Why does he have that whetstone knife? Why is he taking my measurements?
So the night made me feel unique in the eyes of the stranger. And then this amazing.
Yeah, here we come back to the.
Yeah, he told me he made sculptures of figure skaters, not of the women's bodies, but of the air that whipped around them. A study of negative space, which he said was the where we were not that made us.
Yep. A girl missing is suddenly a girl noticed.
Exactly. That is exactly
wow.
it. And then you have this whirlwind whipping around a lone girl, which is exactly the situation of the speaker in the tornado.
Yeah, that drove her into the truck stop.
Right. And then this sort of tornado, this dizzying sense of this media, like going around with the stories after stories after stories of sensational stories, right? That the where we were not that made us, you're exactly right. This like... a dead girl's noticed. And I also really like this whirlwind and this touch back to the tornado, because I feel like in a lot of ways the entire rhetorical trajectory of the poem is a kind of tornado. You have this very broad social view that's sort
of the top of the tornado.
Yeah, the top
of
the tornado.
We funnel down
to this one scene. Right. We get story after story. It's broad and it comes down to this point, this one point. Dizzy from beer, I thought, why not step into that space? He locked the door behind me. And we know nothing good happens after that.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, it very well could be, if this is in Harford Square, it's in a large city, that of course you would lock the door behind you when you walk into an apartment. But everything...
This has not been building up to...
No, this has not been like...
He did not give her chamomile tea and a foot rub and say, sweetie, you've had too much drink. I'm going to call a cab for you, or do you have somebody I can contact? No, that did not happen here.
Right. So that this moment is leading... The whole poem is leading up to this absolutely chilling moment. And then leaves us there to
Well, imagine the worst.
Exactly.
We'll imagine far worse than she can write.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Because she's given us so many real life situations over and over and over again that, I mean, if we wanted to, we could just choose any one of those and go with it. But every single time I read this poem, and I have been teaching it now for a long time, every single time I get down to that, he locked the door behind me, I get goosebumps every time. I think it's just such an amazing, it's a longish poem for a poem. I mean, it's sort of a stupid thing to say. I mean, they're epic poems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compared to epic poems, this is quite short.
True.
But it has so many stories in it that she weaves all the way through. And there's so much juxtaposition in those stories with the speaker herself. And the way that it's constructed to sort of whip around in this large cultural context and then narrow down to the eye, to the speaker, in this one focused moment. Because what it feels like is she's sort of building this thesis at this particular moment. When we get to the large philosophical moment, the expository moment of, for some girls, our bodies are not immortal so much as, right? Because it almost feels like she is trying to explain her actions in this particular moment of this carelessness, you know, because there's always that question, why did you go with him?
It always comes back to, why did you do this? What were you thinking?
Yes.
More like,
and she's like, it was always coming. Like
from some angle at some point, yeah. And I was tired of it.
I was tired of worrying about it. Yeah. I was tired of being anxious by it. I was tired of hearing about every gruesome death of every woman. And I just decided, you know,
screw it. At this moment, fine.
Yeah.
If this is where it's going to happen, I will step towards it.
Yeah, but there's this anxiety that leads to this recklessness in that particular moment.
Well, I'm glad when you came back, you brought such uplifting stuff with you.
Well, I've been avoiding talking about this poem for most of our
really?
Episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, I could. I mean, I'm.
Because it's tough. It's a tough poem.
It's a tough one. I just wish it wasn't, you know, the tail end of winter and I hadn't seen you in a couple of days. And
well, I'm back home safely and I'm not feeling reckless.
Okay. Anymore? Or wait a minute. What happened in Colorado?
No, come on. I hung out with Natanya the whole time. It was great.
She's dangerous.
She's decidedly not dangerous. She's like a super mom.
I've heard stories about her drinking in Alaska. She's dangerous.
She's fun.
Yeah. Okay, so right. You gonna hit us with this again?
Yes.
If you want to read along with this incredibly joyous and uplifting poem, as Danielle reads it, go to our website, livefromthebasement.com. Click on show notes tab along the top, then scroll to the show title with the poem's name. The most recent show is always on top.
You can change your life.
Dangerous for Girls by Connie Voisin. It was the summer of Chandra Levy disappearing from Washington, D.C. Her lover, a congressman, evasive and blow-dried from Modesto. The TV wandering in every room in America to an image of her tight jeans and piles of curls frozen in a studio pose. It was a summer the only woman known as a serial killer, a $10 whore trolling the plains of Central Florida, said she knew she would kill again. Murder filled her dreams. And if she walked in the world, it would crack her open with its awful wings. It was a summer that in Texas, another young woman killed her 5 children, left with too many little boys, always pregnant. One Thanksgiving, she tried to slash her own throat. That summer, the congressman lied again about the nature of his relations, or, as he said, he couldn't remember if they had sex that last night he saw her. But there were many anonymous girls that summer. There always are, who lower their neck to the stone and pray, not to God, but to the Virgin, herself once a young girl, chosen in her room by an archangel. Instead of praying, that summer I watched television Reruns of a UFO series featuring a melancholic woman detective who had gotten cancer and was made sterile by aliens. I watched infomercials, exercise machines, pasta makers, and a product called Nails Again with Henna. Ladies, make your nails steely strong, naturally. And then the photograph of Chandra Levy would appear again, below a bright red number, such as 81, to indicate the days she was missing. Her mother said, "Please understand how we're feeling," when told that the police don't believe she will be found alive. Though they searched the parks and forests of the capital for the remains, and I remembered being caught in Tennessee, my tent filled with wind lifting around me. "Tornado, honey," said the operator, when I called in fear. The highway barren, I drove to a truck stop where maybe 100 trucks hummed in pale, even rows, like eggs in a carton. Truckers paced in the dining room, fatigue in their beards, in their bottomless cups of coffee. The store sold handcuffs, dirty magazines, t-shirts that read, "Ass, gas, or grass, nobody rides for free," and a bulletin board bore a public notice. Jane Doe, found in a refrigerator box outside Johnson, Tennessee. Her slight measurements and weight. The photographs were of her face, not peaceful in death, and of her tattoos, "Born to Run," and JT, caught in scroll works of roses. One winter in Harvard Square, I wandered drunk, my arms full of still warm, stolen laundry, and a man said, "Come to my studio." And of course I went. For some girls, our bodies are not immortal so much as expendable. We have punished them or wearied from dragging them around for so long, and so we go wearing the brilliant plumage of the possibly freed by death. Quick on the icy sidewalks, I felt thin and fleet, and the night made me feel unique in the eyes of the stranger. He told me he made sculptures of figure skaters, not of the women's bodies, but of the air that whipped around them. A study of negative space, which he said was the where we were not that made us. Dizzy from beer, I thought, why not step into that space? He locked the door behind me.
Foot race against supermodels.
There's actually something that strikes me about those truckers.
What is that?
That they are linked to consumption, capitalism also. They're the ones bringing all of the goods mm-hmm. from place to place.
The meat.
Yeah.
The yarn, whatever. Yeah.
And it also strikes me that this is, I mean, obviously a very dark poem.
Right. I'll lighten it up with some laugh track or something during your read.
Oh, my God. That
maybe
would be
some slide whistle.
Horrible. And, some kazoo.
Yeah. And some duck quackings or I don't know. Whatever I think would be the funniest.
No.
Gotta please lighten
don't.
The mood. This is dark.
Yeah, I know. Please don't do that.
Do. Some little calliope music.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Wednesdays, if you're in the Willamette Valley, please tune in to our radio show on KMUZ. That's at 100.7.
And 88.5 at 2 o'clock on Wednesdays.
Yeah, 2 to 3 on Wednesdays.
And we promise to be in better moods with, we can't guarantee you lighter material next week, but we'll dazzle you with it.
We'll try to dazzle you with it.
We'll elevate everybody's mood. Our theme music is by Status Q.
We have links on our homepage for you to subscribe to our show on iTunes and Spotify. You can also subscribe through the Google Play Store.
Our show notes have their own tab on our website. There you can find a copy of the work we discussed, a link to purchase the work, author information, or anything else we thought might be relevant.
If you have a comment, suggestion, correction, or an alternate reading of the poem, please send us a message using our contact page.
If you want to hear Danielle read some of her work, click on the Vanity Press tab on our website. Okay, well, I am now going to sit and talk with my wife for a while, who I have not seen in many days. This was fun, but we can't really...
We need to catch up.
Yeah, we need to catch up and reconnect and decompress and find some happiness. This is a... Let's go watch something uplifting after we talk, if we're still awake. Anyhow, I love you.
I love you too.
You folks at home, have a good night or morning, depending on when you listen.
Good night.
Good night. Or good morning.
Good morning.
We'll do this, and then we will focus on getting to know each other again.
And at some later date.
Yeah, you're probably going
to tomorrow. You've got to edit this, and then probably start on your other. I would really like for the whole family to go somewhere tomorrow afternoon.
Maybe we should do that.
Somewhere newish, if it's nice.
Or a walk.
Yeah, or a walk.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, go down to something.
Yeah. Just get everybody's gears back aligned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too late for coffee.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, go for it.
Welcome to Lit from the Basement. This is Danielle.
This is Max.
I'm an author and professor.
I led a band of eugenics war era supermen until I ran afoul of Captain Kirk. Now I'm a stay-at-home dad.
We're a married couple who discuss literature in our basement while